Okay, so ready to dive into another fascinating case today.
Absolutely. Always ready to unpack some legal complexities.
All right, well, today we're looking at Curdo v. a Country Place Condominium Association. It's a pretty significant Fair Housing Act case, and I think it raises some really crucial points for, anyone living in or dealing with community housing, really.
Yeah, definitely.
So, the mission here, right, is to get beyond just like the surface level of this dispute. We
Right.
want to understand why it matters so much. And to do that, we're going to be looking at some excerpts from the actual legal decision,
Okay.
but also, we've got some analysis to kind of help us break down those key takeaways. And really what it boils down to is how rules that seem equal on paper can actually have really unequal effects in the real world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And what makes Curdo so interesting is that it kind of forces us to think about like balancing different needs and rights within a community, right?
Yeah.
Because here you've got, religious accommodation kind of bumping up against this fundamental right to not be discriminated against based on sex,
Right.
which, is protected under the
The
FHA.
Fair Housing Act.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just it's a really fascinating example of how these legal principles, actually play out in everyday situations in people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And crucially, it's important to remember that the FHA prohibits discrimination based on several protected characteristics,
Right.
including sex.
Okay, so let's get down to the specifics here.
Okay.
This case all revolves around a senior living community and a pretty heated dispute over their swimming pool.
Right.
So what exactly was going on there?
Well, at the heart of it, the Condominium Association had implemented this policy of gender segregated pool hours.
Okay, so it's not like one group was totally banned from the pool, but rather they had specific times when only men could swim and other times when only women could swim.
Right. It's about the specific blocks of time that were designated.
Gotcha. And so who are the people who actually brought this legal challenge? Like, what were their circumstances that led them to say, hey, this isn't right?
Well, there were a few plaintiffs. There was Marie Curto, and then there was also married couple Steve and Diana Lusardi.
Okay.
And Marie, she just wanted to be able to use the pool in the evenings with her family.
Makes sense. Yeah.
But the Lusardis had a slightly more pressing need. Diana had experienced some strokes and needed regular pool therapy, and this needed to happen in the evenings,
Yeah.
and Steve had to be there to help her in the water.
Right. So it's not just a casual preference. There were real limitations here because of this segregated schedule.
Exactly. Yeah, very practical limitations.
So can you kind of paint a picture of what that pool schedule actually looked like? Like, how was it divided?
Yeah, sure. So here's where you start to see the inequality, really come out right.
Yeah.
Because while the total number of hours that were allocated to men and women throughout the week, it was roughly the same.
Okay.
But the timing of those hours was vastly different.
Okay.
Men had access to almost all of the prime evening and weekend slots. And those are the times when, most people who work during the day or just want to relax and, enjoy a recreational facility like that, we want to use the pool.
Right. Yeah.
And the women, well, they mostly had hours during the weekday and mostly during the day.
So you can see right away how that would be a problem.
Exactly.
Like, even if the total hours add up, if one group's time is totally outside of when they can actually use the pool,
Right.
it just seems inherently unfair.
Absolutely.
So what was the association's reasoning?
Yeah, what was their justification for this kind of schedule?
Like, what did they say?
Well, they said that the gender segregated hours were necessary to accommodate the modesty rules of Orthodox Jewish residents in the community.
Okay.
They claim that these residents couldn't swim at the same time as members of the opposite sex.
I see.
But, and this is a really critical point that the court later highlighted, the association didn't actually provide enough evidence to show that this complete segregation was truly necessary.
Oh, so they made the claim, but they didn't back it up
Exactly.
with any concrete evidence of a genuine religious burden.
Exactly.
And it sounds like it wasn't just an inconvenience either. Like, there were actual penalties if you didn't follow these segregated hours.
Yeah, that's right.
Really?
So both Marie Curto and the Lusardis, they had these specific needs, and the women's schedule just didn't work for them. So they ended up using the pool during times that weren't designated for their gender, and as a result, they were fined by the Condo Association for breaking the rules.
Wow, so they got penalized for trying to you know, use the pool when they needed to.
Essentially, yes.
Wow. Okay, so we've got the situation all laid out, right? We know what was happening. Now let's see how this whole thing played out in the legal system.
Okay.
What happened at the district court level? What was their initial decision?
So initially, the case went to the district court, and actually they sided with the condo association.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and their main reasoning was that because the total number of pool hours for men and women was about equal, the policy didn't count as discrimination under the FHA.
Hmm. It seems like they were just looking at the numbers, not at the actual usability of those hours.
Right. Yeah, it was a very, very surface level analysis.
Okay. So what prompted the appeal then?
Yeah, what led to that decision being reversed?
And how did that happen?
Right. So the plaintiffs appealed to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, and that's where things changed.
Okay.
The Third Circuit really took a much deeper look into the nuances of the FHA.
Mm.
And they highlighted two really important legal concepts, disparate impact and facial discrimination.
Yeah.
And they recognized that just because the numbers look equal on paper, it doesn't mean there's actually equal access in practice.
Right, right.
So I think the key takeaway here is that, you know, equality under the FHA isn't just about what a rule says, but about what it does.
Right.
Even if a rule doesn't explicitly mention gender, if it disproportionately disadvantages one group, then that's a problem.
It's a problem. Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So let's really break down those legal arguments a bit more.
Sure.
Like, what were the main questions that the Third Circuit was trying to answer when they reviewed this case?
Well, basically, there were two big questions. The first was, did this policy of gender-segregated pool hours, specifically how the times were divided, did that actually violate the FHA's prohibition against discrimination based on sex?
Okay.
And the second question was, can policies that seem neutral on the surface, you know, meaning they don't explicitly say they're intended to discriminate, can those still be found to violate the FHA if they actually have a discriminatory effect on a protected group?
Yeah, that's a really important distinction to make.
Right.
So let's start with that first concept, facial discrimination.
Okay.
How did the court see this pool schedule as being discriminatory on its face?
Well, they saw it as facially discriminatory because it explicitly separated access to the pool based on sex.
Right.
The rules literally stated that at certain times only men were allowed, and at other times only women were allowed.
Hmm.
And policies that make these kinds of explicit classifications based on sex are, you know, inherently suspect under anti-discrimination law.
Right.
They trigger a much higher level of legal scrutiny.
Yeah.
So the Third Circuit recognized that this explicit segregation itself was a form of discrimination.
Okay. So then there's the concept of disparate impact.
Right.
How did that factor into the Third Circuit's decision?
So this is where the actual reality of the pool schedule really comes into play. The court acknowledged that even if the condo association didn't intend to discriminate against women, the way the schedule was structured had a much bigger negative effect on them.
Yeah.
By giving men most of the evening and weekend hours, the policy really limited women's ability to use the pool during those desirable times.
Right. And we talked about that a bit before.
Exactly. And Judge Ambrose, in his opinion, he pointed out this imbalance very clearly.
Okay.
He noted that women only had access to 3.5 evening hours per week compared to men's 16.5 hours.
Wow.
It's a huge difference.
Yeah, yeah, that really puts it into perspective.
Right, and the court reasoned that this big disparity actually reflected and reinforced these traditional stereotypes about women's availability.
Right.
It basically assumed that women were more likely to be free during the weekday and less likely to have jobs or commitments in the evenings or on weekends.
Right, right. Yeah, it just plays into all these assumptions.
Exactly.
Okay, so what about the association's religious accommodation argument?
Okay.
Why didn't that work in the end?
Well, the key issue was that they just didn't have enough evidence.
Okay.
You know, the court recognized that it's important to provide reasonable accommodations for religious practices.
Right.
But they also emphasized that those accommodations can't override basic anti-discrimination laws unless there's a really clear and strong need.
Okay.
And in this case, the condo association just didn't provide enough concrete evidence to show that getting rid of the gender-segregated schedule would actually burden the religious practices of their Orthodox Jewish residents.
Right.
You know, general claims weren't enough to outweigh the protection against sex discrimination.
So the court is basically saying you can't just say, oh, it's for religious reasons and leave it at that.
Exactly. You have to show how not having the discriminatory policy would actually cause harm or violate religious beliefs.
Yeah, that's a really important point.
Okay.
And now, I know there was also a concurring opinion in this case.
Right.
So what was Judge Fuentes' take on the whole thing?
Judge Fuentes actually took an even stronger stance.
Oh.
Yeah. He agreed with the majority that the pool policy violated the FHA, but he argued that it was discriminatory in and of itself, what's called per se discriminatory.
Okay.
And he made a really powerful comparison to the history of racial discrimination in the U.S.
Okay.
Specifically, he referred to the separate but equal doctrine, which we know is unconstitutional.
Right, right.
His point was that separating people based on sex like this, especially when it comes to housing, is just inherently discriminatory.
Okay.
Regardless of whether the total hours are equal or what the stated reason is, he basically said separate but equal is just as wrong when it comes to sex as it is when it comes to race and housing.
Yeah, that's a really powerful argument.
It is.
So zooming out a bit, what are the bigger implications of this Curdo decision
for
both like housing providers and people living in these communities?
Well, I think the main takeaway is that the FHA's commitment to equality in housing goes way beyond just surface level numbers. This idea of separate but equal just doesn't fly under the FHA, no matter what protected characteristic we're talking about.
Okay.
So housing providers need to be super careful when they're making policies that differentiate based on sex or other protected characteristics.
Mm.
Even if they think their intention is good, even if they think it's an accommodation, they need to really think about whether these policies are accidentally reinforcing harmful stereotypes or creating unequal access to facilities and services.
Right. So it's not just about intentional discrimination. It's about the impact.
Exactly.
Right.
And remember, the FHA covers all housing-related services and facilities. That includes everything from common areas to pools to maintenance services.
Right.
Curdo makes it very clear that the same anti-discrimination rules apply to these things as they do to the housing units themselves.
Okay, so it's really about thinking about the big picture.
Absolutely.
And making sure that everyone has equal access, not just in theory, but in practice.
Exactly. And it's about being aware of both intentional discrimination and policies that might have a discriminatory effect, even without any bad intent.
Right.
The FHA prohibits both.
So even if a condo association doesn't mean to discriminate, if their rule ends up harming women or reinforcing stereotypes, it can still be a violation.
Exactly.
Hmm. And as we saw in Curdo, just giving an equal amount of time overall doesn't mean there's equal meaningful access.
Right.
Things like the timing of that access and people's real life schedules matter a lot.
Absolutely.
This has been a really insightful look at Curdo v. A Country Place. It really shows how ensuring fairness in housing means going beyond just the numbers and thinking about the real impact of rules on different groups.
I completely agree. It's a reminder that to achieve true equality, we have to examine the assumptions and the potential consequences of policies, even those that seem neutral at first glance.
Absolutely. So with all that in mind, here's a final thought for everyone listening. What are some other seemingly neutral rules or policies in your own communities that might be leading to unequal access or reinforcing stereotypes?
Hmm.
Think about things like scheduling for gyms, rules about common spaces, even how communication happens in the community.
Yeah, it's about looking beyond the surface and considering the real impact.
Exactly. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.
Thanks for having me.